Chapter 5. Marja. The royal carriage doesn't stand out as much as I feared. Here in the capital, other powerful families have sent their children on the borough tour in carriages much more garish. Mother prefers efficient simplicity over ornate design. Her carriage is dignified, if plain, but it is designed to withstand demon talons and Milanese flamework weapons alike. Beneath the polished wood veneer of its panels and roof, the carriage is comprised of specially warded glass, stronger, thinner, and lighter than steel. But while the carriage doesn't stand out, Mother's cavalry surrounding the cart does. The hollow lancers have always been flamboyant, like their leader, Captain Gammon, with colourfully lacquered wooden armour under bright blue tabards and yellow capes, feathers in their helms. I always thought they looked quite fine, prancing through manoeuvres in the yard, lances standing in precise lines like the bristles of a fine brush. But here, they shout my presence at a time I want nothing more than anonymity. Selin's plan won't work if everyone on the entire tour's got one eye on us. We lead a procession that grows and grows as we wind through Cutter's Hollow. Teens are gathering today in every borough. The tourism minister estimates over 1,000 in the group from the capital alone. For some, it is their first time away from home. Others have made it an annual tradition, a state-funded excuse to travel and shop. A small army of vendors follow the tour, in addition to those in the countless market squares we'll encounter along the way. A select few tourists ride horses or travel in carriages, but most walk or crowd together in the backs of mule carts. The streets of Cutter's Hollow curve and loop, punctuated by irregular plazas, fields and stands of trees. Even the buildings have shapes and sizes that defy practical architecture. This is not the work of some mad civil engineer. From above, the odd shapes form the lines of Mother's great wards, lines of power that draw ambient magic and shape it into a forbidding that no demons can abide.
Our first stop will be New Risen, the site of the most famous confrontation in the Battle of New Moon in 333 AR.
First Minister Arthur is in his glory, making the carriage his personal classroom as he recites the history of the boroughs of Hollow Duchy. It's so boring, I almost wish I'd stayed behind. I look out the window and see Minda and our other classmates as they follow on foot. I watch enviously as they laugh and mingle with a group from the Warders' Academy.
It was here that Arlen Bales was seen glowing in the night sky as he drew power from the first Great Ward, throwing fire and lightning at the demon horde.
That can't possibly be honest word, Selin says. I'm inclined to agree, though there are paintings of the event in every holy house from here to Krasia.
I didn't witness it personally, Arthur admits, but I heard accounts from those who did, and I saw the Deliverer's magic firsthand. This is not conjecture. It is verified historical fact.
Selin and I share a look, but neither of us argues further.
The battle was the first test of the great wards your mother built to shelter the refugees from Krasia's advance, Arthur continues. Whole villages packed up and fled the path of your father's enemies, abandoning home and field to arrive on the doorstep of Hollow, often with little more than their culture and their lives.
My father's armies. The thought is so alien. I only met father once. 14 years ago, just after the Demon War, when he came to Hollow to sign the new Pact of the Free Cities. Politics have kept him away ever since. I was not yet 2, and don't recall much of it, but I do remember how tall Father was, clad in flowing robes and haloed in a rainbow of colour as the gemstones on his crown split the light. When he held me, it felt like the safest place in the world. I can't remember what he said. His voice was so deep and soothing, I felt it in my bones. I'm told I fell asleep in his arms. It's difficult to imagine that same man leading a horde of warriors across Theza, crushing cities and towns to levy men into his demon-killing army. But it isn't in question. Verified historical fact, as Arthur would say. Miko watches Arthur impassively as he speaks, her eyes unreadable. She does not correct him or offer defense of our father's actions.
Another leader would have turned the refugees away, Arthur says. Others did turn them away. Fort Angiers closed their city gates. Fort Milne increased the garrison at the crossing to the river dividing. The Lactonian captains refused to give refugees passage to the city on the lake. Only Duchess Paper offered healing and succour, teaching them to build their own great wards, interconnected with the key ward of Cutter's Hollow. There were 16 boroughs at the end of the war, but birth rates soared in the years of peace and prosperity that followed. A score of new great wards have been added since, making Hollow the most populous duchy in Theza. I've heard the story before, of course. Tales of Mother's greatness, her bravery, her selflessness in protecting everyone who came to her in search of succour. It's no wonder the people love her. But all I can think of is her disapproving stare, and how hard I have to fight even for small freedoms in half measure. I think of what Perrin has hidden beneath the carriage, and wonder if I will have the courage to steal a few days of real freedom. I let Arthur drone on, half listening as I stare out the windows. I've been to many of the inner boroughs alongside Mother as she gave speeches, breaking ground and cutting ribbons at universities, public libraries and hospits. Now, for the first time, I'm travelling into the outer boroughs. By tomorrow, I'll be farther from home, farther from Mother, than I have ever been. I take a breath, and already my chest feels lighter. Our first stop is the market square of New Risen, where hundreds gather to begin the tour. I move to join Minda and the others, but the boys from the Warders Academy shy away. The tour has chaperones, but nothing like Captain Wanda, who follows a step behind me, looming over everyone in her warded armour.
Olive, Arthur says, perhaps you can tell the group when the Cathedral of New Risen was built.
I press my lips, trying to swallow my annoyance. No doubt the minister thinks it grand to have the Princess of Hollow as his assistant. Indeed, everyone falls silent to listen. But it's just another way for me to be singled out, when all I want is to feel like I belong. Everyone is waiting. I shake my head to clear it, reciting names and dates drilled into me since I could first read and write. None of them do justice to the building itself, with its massive dome and soaring columns. As we enter the nave, every neck arches in unison to see the famed painting on the ceiling. Arlan Bales aloft in the night sky, his body alight with the wards tattooed into his flesh, driving the demons from Hollow with fire and lightning. The cathedral holds a service on that date every year, and Mother always attends, staying long in a seamlessly ending receiving line. I've spent countless hours staring at that painting, and am no longer awed, but the other tourists gasp at the sight. Some draw wards in the air or whisper prayers. More than a few kneel, and one girl simply bursts into tears. Selen rolls her eyes, and I have to keep from smirking. We spend hours walking around the city centre, ending with shopping in the market square. Arthur retires, and I convince Wanda to walk a few steps back so we can spend time with our classmates. Selen is in fine form, spinning tales and telling jokes. Our laughter has even drawn back some of the boys from the Warders Academy. I try to similarly pull ahead of Mika, but she keeps finding some trinket to examine or vendor to talk to that keeps her close. Crasians are famous hagglers. and I don't think I've ever seen Mika pay full price for something. The others watch with awe as she argues vendors into slashing their prices. All too quickly, the sun sets, and station separates us from our friends. Our classmates go to the common house, while Arthur has booked Selen and me into New Risen's finest inn. The dinner brought to our rooms is delicious, but out in the square, I can hear music and singing and raucous laughter from the common houses, and wish I were there instead. That just once, I could feel like part of the world and not just an observer. Selen looks just as trapped. If I hadn't come along with an entourage, she would have found a way to be out there. Instead, we play cards and go to bed, still hearing sounds of cheer from the square. The tour continues for days. Some villages barely get a mention as we pass them on the road. Others have more than we could see in a week, but most are like New Risen. A few sights of note, then shopping in the market square until Wanda herds us to the inn. As they start to blur together, the size of the groups thins. Arthur is needed back at the capital, and many of the older tourists return with him. The younger ones have planned their entire summer around the tour and press on. At last, we reach Pump Forge, one of the border villages where groups are gathering to hike into the borderlands. The village smells of smoke and rings with the sound of hammering metal. I know the history of the place. Like the warded children, the pumps were another of Mother's experiments during the war. She helped them develop new ways to craft and ward their arms and armour. And now, pump craftsmanship is sought after by hollowers and children alike. But the forges forced them to give up their nomadic ways. The pumps accepted Mother's rule and protection of the great wards in exchange for serving as a link between the duchy proper and their more feral cousins in the borderlands. The carriage pulls to a stop in the town square, where a giant man is waiting to greet us. His short yellow beard is thick around a strong jaw, his eyes the same icy blue as mine. His arms ripple with muscle under a sleeveless leather vest, and his worn boots and plain breeches belie the speaker's medallion on his chest, embossed with a hammer striking a spear tip atop an anvil.
Aye! Wanda!
Callan! Wanda leaps down and embraces him, then gives him an affectionate shove.
Good to see you.
And you.
The man's voice seems to vibrate the wood of the carriage as he opens the door.
Ain't seen little Olive and Selen since they were...
His eyes widen as he sees us.
Little.
Wanda laughs.
Aye, ain't that any more? Welcome to Pump Forge, princesses.
Callan gives a bow. I have no recollection of meeting this man, but that's no surprise. I've been paraded through Mother's sitting room to let visitors have a look at me since I was born. Some are memorable, but even recent ones tend to blur. But I know the look cutters get when they consider you family. Speaker Callan's affection is genuine, but it adds one more overprotective set of eyes on us.
You'll give them the tour? Wanda asks.
Hey, Callan flashes us a smile. Most of the action's in the market square. Town's full to bursting with groups in for the hike, and merchants have come from all over. Caravan from Crasia has everyone in a stir.
We get merchants from Crasia all the time, Wanda says.
Callan shakes his head.
Not New Crasia. These are in from Desert Spear.
Tst!
Mika looks up sharply at the words. Even Wanda blinks.
Honest word?
Callan points to a cluster of brightly coloured tents in the far corner of the square, a little village amid the usual open stalls of northern markets. Desert Spear is home to the so-called Lost Tribe of Crasia, the Marja. Depending on which history you read, either the Marja deserted my father's army during the Demon War and are blood traitors, or the Marja were themselves betrayed by my half-brother, Arsome, and left with honour to avoid the civil war. Regardless, the Marja returned to their ancestral home, the massive, walled oasis city of Fort Crasia, known to my father's people as Desert Spear, on the far side of the Crasian Desert. That was 15 summers ago, and no one has heard from them until recently, when they sent a messenger to Mother's court with a petition to join the Pact of the Free Cities. Mother is preparing to host the Marja delegates soon, I say. Perhaps they are opening the border? Mika makes a delicate spitting noise behind her veil. They are Marja spies.
Bah! Callan waves a hand. Ain't hurting anyone and we got nothing to hide. They got good wares to sell, and this is a town that knows its craft.
Callan leans into Wanda and lowers his voice. I don't have ears like Darren Bale's, but they're sharper than most, and I catch the words.
You sure Olive can't go on the hike? If Leisha is worried, I can collect a few forgers and take her myself. Won't be in danger. Ain't seen a demon around here and...
Hope rouses in my breast, but Wanda crushes it.
Mistress says no.
There is a finality to her words, like the click of a lock. My hand drifts to my dress, touching the tiny vial secreted in a hidden pocket. I had allowed myself to forget it, but now the feel of the hard glass reawakens the nervous excitement and sick fear at the thought of Selin's plan. Tomorrow. In just a few hours, I'll be free of Wanda, and Mika, and every other adult Mother has sent to smother me. I'll be with folk who don't know who I am, and regardless of how I am dressed, I'll be able to just be myself for the first time. If I'm brave enough to do it. Even now, I don't know that I can. I won't have Selin there to goad me into boldness. It will be my choice to use the vial. And I'm afraid if I do, Mika and Wanda won't forgive me. And life will never be the same. Pump Forge is rougher than other villages on the tour. There are no great manses here, and I see little in the way of fashion or luxury. Even Speaker Callan has coal-smudged clothes and dirty fingernails. The women dress much as the men, and all have thick muscles peeking from their shirt sleeves. They look ready to pick up weapons and fight at any moment. Still, the forgers are a cheerful lot, with pleasant chatter in the public houses and market square. Travelling merchants drawn to the solstice festival have filled the square with a maze of tents to display their wares. But it is the collection of tents from Desert Spear that draws my gaze and holds it. Mika spoke Crasian to me when I was still in the crib, and I've taken Crasian studies since starting school. But apart from my instructors, a handful of vendors in the capital, and visiting diplomats at court, I have never met any of my people. The Marja are not my tribe, but going into that cluster of tents will be the closest I have ever come to being immersed. I get the sick feeling in my stomach that comes before a test or one of Mother's lectures. What if my accent is wrong? I've been told blue eyes are rare in Crasia, but I don't know how rare. Will they stand out? Or my skin? I am darker than Hollowers, but lighter than my sister or father. I look down at the rugged but fashionable dress I made to wear for the hike. It was too daring even to show Mother, and scandalously immodest by Crasian standards. Might it cause real offence? Selin takes my hand, telling me without a word that she understands. Come on, I'll be right beside you. I squeeze gratefully, and together we move toward the tents. Mika steps in front of us. Beware, sister. The Marja cannot be trusted. Why? I ask. They are Ginjars. Mika makes a dry spitting sound through her veil. Traitors. The Marja abandoned the armies of the Deliverer at the height of Sharak Kar. They returned to the desert and the old ways, sitting out the war while the other tribes fought and died in glory. Selin puts her free hand on her hip. We shouldn't buy their rugs and pottery because they didn't want to die. Cowardice is reason enough. The venom in Mika's voice is surprising. But the Marja were not afraid to die. It was spite that made them turn their backs on Everam and their brothers in the night. I have no argument. The histories are kinder to the Marja, but Mika lived through the events, while I only read about them in books. Mother says we cannot blame a whole people for the decisions of their leaders. Perhaps, Mika allows. But leaders who do not reflect the will of their people do not remain in power. Take my word in this. The Marja are not to be trusted. Minda and the others have already disappeared into the marketplace. Without letting go of my hand, Selen starts walking. Don't trust anyone, eh? Got it. I stumble gratefully along after her. Mika's brows tighten, but she keeps silent pace. The first thing that envelops us is the smell, strange and familiar all at once. Colourful spices are piled high in great baskets. I'm drawn to one, breathing deeply. I turn to Mika. It smells like you're cooking. Powdered hava. Mika takes a pinch. It flavours and preserves meat. It is the centre of Krasian cooking. She lifts her veil just enough to sniff at it, then rubs the pinch off her fingers. But this is not fresh. No doubt they think you Greenlanders won't be able to tell. Well, they did cross the desert with it. If Mika thinks to dissuade me, she is failing. Now that I am here, there is nowhere else I want to be. A Krasian woman appears, clad in the traditional black robe and veil. Her eyes flick over my clothes, but if she disapproves, she gives no sign. I'm fluent in modern Krasian, but the woman notes my dark skin and begins speaking quickly in an unfamiliar dialect that is hard to follow at speed. I stand there stunned as she pauses to wait for a reply, trying desperately to formulate a response. When the silence stretches on too long, Mika steps in. We were looking at your hava, but it is not fresh. I know it's rude, but I allow my sister to take my shoulders and lead me away. I keep my distance from the other vendors as we delve deeper into the little bazaar, taking in the sights and smells as I try to get a feel for the language. The sellers are all women in Krasian blacks. They chatter at every shopper that ventures close and shout entreaties to those who keep back. Most appear to know only a handful of Thesan words, but they use them aggressively, waving arms for emphasis as they hold up items of interest. My friends, come, come see. This will help you find a husband. A vendor holds up a colourful silk scarf and Minda looks up. It's all the opening the woman needs to draw her in. Drawn to a beautiful vase, I enter the largest tent. But this time Mika intercepts the vendor, engaging her with a host of questions before the woman can get to me. Left alone for a moment, I am quick to run hands over the beautiful craft. Machines and mass production have become the fashion in exports from New Krasia, but the items the Marja sell are all handmade. Rugs, clothing, pottery and jewellery with vivid colours and tribal patterns. There are brilliant bolts of cloth and lamps made of beautifully latticed brass. Cures and curios, furniture and fashion, copies of the Evija, the Krasian holy book, along with prayer rugs, candles and incense. Burning samples fill the air with a heady smoke.
Ah!
A voice behind me exclaims, I did not believe it, but it is true. Princess Olive of Hollow, here in my humble bazaar. I want to scream. For a few brief moments I was allowed to be myself, but even here, my station demands I be singled out. But Mother is meeting with the Marja soon. She'll be furious if I am anything but gracious. So I put on my best court smile as I turn to see a small man in garishly coloured silks. He is slender, with nothing of a warrior's build. He kneels as my gaze falls upon him, putting his hands on the tent floor and touching his forehead between them. Rise, please. I try to imitate the Marja accent, but the inflections feel clumsy on my lips. The man takes his head and hands from the floor and rolls back onto his heels. But he keeps his eyes on my feet as he spreads his arms in greeting.
Welcome, Highness. I am Ahman Amsufaj Ammaja. Your presence honours me beyond my worth.
He does not tell me his father's name, as is the custom in Krasia. That, and his flamboyantly coloured silks, tell me much. You are Kafit. Kafit were the lowest caste in Krasian society, men unfit for service as Sharum warriors. The name was synonymous with coward, but unlike warriors, Kafit were allowed to take on other trades, some of them becoming quite wealthy.
Psst! Misha's hiss is low, meant for me alone.
The sound she makes if I use the wrong fork at dinner. I look at Ahman and realize that in stating the obvious, I am being incredibly rude.
Of course, Ahman's smile does not waver.
He speaks his native tongue slowly, no doubt for our benefit. When I saw the carriage marked with your mother's mortar and pestle, I did not dare hope you would grace us with a visit. Come, let me offer you tea and shade.
We just want to browse, I say carefully.
Ha! Ahman waves a hand at the wares on display, as if disgusted at his own stock.
Trinkets for children and jinn. There is no need for one such as yourself to waste time with trivialities. Sit, sit. Let my wives and daughters bring our finest wares to you.
Jinn is Krasian for outsider. Like Kafit, it is often derogatory, effectively synonymous with coward. I've never heard Mika use it. She refers to northerners as Greenlanders instead. I'm not sure if I should be offended on behalf of my mother's people, or flattered that even in Thesan clothes, I appear Krasian enough to be accepted as one of their own. Manners give me no choice but to let the merchant escort us into a canvas-walled back area of the tent. Wanda and Speaker Callan follow us in. They have smiles on their faces, but even the speaker's eyes are wary. I remember Mother's talk of assassins, but it seems ludicrous that someone would dare strike at me here. What could they gain by harming me? Inside, the accommodations are lavish and rich, with an abundance of silk and colour. Ahman gestures to a semicircle of thick velvet pillows. Will you sit? I hesitate, and again Mika steps in, taking a pillow and kneeling gracefully, sitting back on her folded legs. Selin and I mimic her as another woman in black appears. This one has an air of command the others did not. Like Ahman, she is short for a Krasian, with a narrow waist but ample curves.
My jiwa ka, fashva,
Ahman says, indicating that she is his first wife, with dominion over the other women in his household. Fashva bows and says nothing, but I catch her dark eyes watching me from behind her thick black veil. Fashva is followed by half a dozen other black-robed women who lay out a silver tea service, dates, nuts, and honeyed cakes. The teapot steams as delicate ceramic cups are set before us, painted in intricate design. Ahman does not bother to introduce the other women, and their bulky robes make it difficult to tell which might be wives and which daughters. Ahman takes a pillow across from us. Fashva kneels between me and her husband, pouring my cup first, then his. He raises his tea, and I mirror him, as I have been taught. In Krasian custom, the host welcomes guests in order of rank, inviting them to speak their names and drink.
Tst!
Misha raises a finger, stopping Ahman before he can speak a toast. I am Mika Va-Armen, Am Jardir Am Kaji. Ahman is so quick to put down his cup he spills hot tea on his hand. He gasps but does not complain as he puts his hands back on the floor and touches his forehead between them.
Please accept my apologies, Princess. I did not recognize you.
He glances at me, eyes flicking to the cups. His women stand likewise, frozen. Mika is older, but the daughter of one of father's lesser wives, whereas my mother rules these lands. Mika has never put his station above mine before. Instinctively, I understand that I could dispute her claim, but there are politics at work I do not fully comprehend. Achman eyes me, perhaps waiting for me to issue a challenge. When I do not, he nods, and Fashfa fills Mika's cup.
Welcome, Princess of the Kaji.
Achman remains supplicant as he raises his refilled cup. Blessings of Everam upon you. Mika nods. And you? She slips the tiny cup behind her veil and tips it back as Achman drinks. She puts the cup down and gives Selin and me a slight nod. Her voice too low for any save me to hear. It is safe to drink, sister. I blink. Mika usurped my place to taste for poison. Perhaps I should be grateful, but instead I feel even more smothered than I do under Captain Wanda's watchful eye. I barely hear the other toasts as we go through the motions of the tea ceremony. This was made by the great Smith Garzin. Achman holds a velvet pillow, upon which a curved knife sits, quenched in the blood of heroes of the maze. Handle and sheath are polished silver, etched with intricate wardings and encrusted with rubies and emeralds. It's beautiful. I lift the knife reverently and slide the blade free, tilting it to let the wards play across the steel in the candlelight. It is well balanced and sharp, but all the gems and precious metal make it seem more showpiece than weapon. It is a Hanzar, Achman says, as if reading my mind, honed to a razor's edge, but hard as a diamond. Hanzar are the blades of Dharmating priestesses, used not for combat, but for surgery, and for the drawing of blood for the dice. It reminds me of Fava. I am no Dharmating. I slide the blade back into its sheath, flipping it in my fingers to return it, hilt first. Tsst! Misha whispers again. Achman holds up his hands. I am Kafit, princess, and may not touch such a holy item. Idiot, I curse myself, as the merchant holds out the pillow for me to lay the knife upon. It is said your mother casts the dice of foretelling like a Dharmating, Achman says. This might make a worthy gift. I shake my head, feeling my shoulders tense at the mention of mother. If Selin and I go through with our plan, no gift will soothe the Duchess's anger when I return. Her grace is not fond of blades beyond the gatherer's scalpel. Achman's smile never wavers as Fashfa takes the blade away. Another woman appears with a jeweled chalice, followed by a series of beautiful rugs woven from fine wool in vibrant tribal patterns. A set of five rings after that, each wrought of silver and delicately warded, connected by fine silver chains to a jeweled bracelet. I've never seen Selin interested in jewellery before, but she seems transfixed, trying them on and flexing her hand, marvelling at the beauty. How much? Like mine, her creation is careful and succinct. 300 drachi, Achman says. A beautiful bargain for a beautiful princess. Mika barks a laugh. You do nothing to dispel the reputation of Marja as thieves and cheats, Kafit. This is not worth 1/5 the price. I look to Achman, expecting him to be offended. But instead, there is a hint of smile at his lips. What follows is a back and forth of shouted crazing so fast I can barely follow. Selin and I gape as they argue the merits of the piece, then the price in drachi, then the exchange rate. Mika calls him a cheat and a thief twice more before grudgingly settling on a value in gold suns. Selin happily counts the coins into Achman's palm. Hollow suns are stamped with mother's face, and I cannot shake the feeling she is watching, even here, Fresh tea for our guests. The merchant is smiling as he whispers into the ear of one of his daughters, who returns with a light, flexible veil of warded coins, strung with delicate wire. Ahman lifts the item for us to admire. I have never worn a veil, but it is breathtakingly beautiful. He smiles at Mika. Something else to haggle over, princess? Mika shakes her head, though I've known her long enough to see the interest in her eyes. It is too immodest.
For a common dalting, perhaps.
Ahman's eyes twinkle.
But worthy of an elder princess of the Khaji, at times when it is good to remind others of her station.
My station in the eyes of Everam is all that matters. Mika dismisses the item with a wave, but her eyes follow it as Ahman returns it to the pillow. Next, Fashva presents a small cylindrical box with a domed top. The box is silver, with a moulded circle of defensive wards around its circumference, meeting at a ward circle shaped like a shield with a spear behind it. At the shield's centre is a clear gemstone the size of my thumbnail. The negative space around the symbols is painted with brightly coloured lacquer. Ahman removes the domed top, revealing two dangling earrings. He holds them up for me to admire.
The purest yellow gold was used for the filigree, and 14 sequins, a holy number, surround the 9-carat fire opals.
Ahman trails off when he sees I am not paying attention, still staring at the open box on the pillow. The little spear behind the shield isn't moulded. It's a pin, and there is a hinge on the opposite side. What is this?
A simple trinket box, Your Highness, Ahman says. There is nothing special about it.
What does it do? I press. The merchant shrugs, taking the box and pulling free the little spear. The cylinder opens and the silver floor falls away.
May I?
He indicates my upper arm. Mika tenses, but I hold out my arm and allow Ahman to close the cuff around my biceps and reinsert the pin. It is snug, but not so tight it restricts me when I flex the muscle. I lift the armlet, marvelling at how the colours dance in the light. I love it. How much?
For this, Ahman waves a hand dismissively. Keep it as my gift to you, Highness.
Oh, I could never, I say.
I insist, Ahman says.
No, I must...
Tst!
Mika's hiss sends a shiver down my spine, and I let the protest die on my lips.
Thank you.
My smile is genuine as I remove the cuff and reassemble the beautiful box.
It is nothing, Ahman says.
I would not have considered it a worthy gift, but if it caught your eye when so many treasures passed without remark, it must be so. May it protect you tomorrow night, when you travel beyond the great wards. The smile fades from my face. I won't be going on the hike with the others. Mother won't allow it.
Ahman nods.
The Duchess is wise. Knee's hold may have weakened in your lands, but she is not gone. In Desert Spear, Sharum still battle and bleed in the maze each night.
My eyes widen, and even Mika looks up.
The desert alagai were not destroyed by the deliverer's hand. She uses the Krasian word for calling.
Alas, no. Ahman draws a ward in the air. The Dharma tell us it is because Everam wishes the Marja to remain strong, while our Greenland cousins grow fat and lax. And perhaps it is so. Others whisper it is the Creator's punishment for our retreat from Sharak Kar.
In Evera, Mika says. The word means Everam's will. Mysterious and unknowable. She could be agreeing with either theory, but considering her attitude toward the Marja tribe, there is little doubt which she believes. Still, there is no satisfaction in her eyes. The news that demons still plague her homeland obviously does not sit well with her. Perhaps the Shah Dharma Kar will send aid, if a peace can be made. A hush falls in the tent as she speaks the name. Shah Dharma Ka, Arman Jardir, first among the warrior priests, who sits atop the skull throne and commands the greatest army in the world. My father.
Perhaps, Ahman agrees. But in the silence that follows, there is no sense that this is something the Maja desire.
Why did they abandon my father and the Greenlands, returning to the desert 15 summers ago? Was it cowardice? Spite? Or was there something more? Tension grows thick in the hot air of the tent, and I blurt the first thing I can think of to break it. I'll take the earrings, my eyes flick to Mika, and the veil as well.